Okay, just going to get situated. Yeah, thank you. Okay. So today I'm going to be speaking on the story surrounding Hagar. Hagar is known for being Abraham's Egyptian slave and the mother of Ishmael. Her story is primarily in Genesis 16, with a portion in Genesis 21. But the chapters leading up to these ones lend a background that is important to her story. And for those in the Wednesday Bible study, we will be talking a lot more about some of these chapters in the coming weeks. But without going into too much detail, but so that we have a reference point, in Genesis 12, God calls Abram and promises him that he will make him into a great nation, promising him land and descendants, that he will make his name great, and that he will be blessed and be a blessing. Hagar presumably also enters Abram's life in Genesis 12 when Abram goes to Egypt, to live in Egypt because of a famine in his land. So he likely acquires this Egyptian slave then. He later moves back to Canaan and Hebron. Then in Genesis 15, God confirms his covenant with Abram. Abram wonders how God's promise for descendants could be true because he has remained childless. But God confirms that Abram will have a son who is his own flesh and blood, and that his offspring will be as numerous as the stars in the sky. And it says, Abram believed God. So fresh off that covenant promise, Genesis 16 opens discussing Hagar and Sarai, Abram's wife. So let's read the passage to begin. Also of note is that the names can be confusing because Sarai's name is later changed to Sarah and Abram to Abraham, which is probably mostly how we know them. But this change doesn't occur until Genesis 17. So this passage in the Bible is prior to the name change. So I'll have it on the screen here, if it works. Okay. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, "Behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. And he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." But Abram said to Sarai, "Behold, your servant is in your power. Do to her as you please." Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" She said, "I am fleeing from my mistress Sarai." The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen." So she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing." For she said, "Truly here I have seen him who looks after me." Therefore, the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. It lies between Kadesh and Beret. Okay. So let's go through this passage and see what we learn about Hagar, Sarai, and Abram, and most importantly about God, since the Bible is a book about him. So verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. As we learned when we went through some of the women in the Bible at last year's coffee hours, barrenness was shameful in that culture, and yet common of many of the mothers of important men in the Bible. Elizabeth, Hannah, and Rachel were all barren for a time. And we see the same of Sarai, who will end up having Isaac, who is a promised child and one of the patriarchs of the faith. And then it says she had an Egyptian servant. To go back to what Jen Wilkin taught us about Genesis, Moses has written this book for the Israelites after they have exited Egypt and are in the wilderness. Egypt would have perked their ears and had a certain connotation to the Israelites, one of which is a picture of self-reliance. Isaiah 31 says, "Woe to those who go down to Egypt for help, who rely on horses, who trust in the multitude of their chariots and in great strength of their horsemen, but do not look to the Holy One of Israel or seek help from the Lord." As we will see further, Hagar, this Egyptian slave, will represent self-reliance for Abram and Sarai rather than relying on God's promise. Verse 2, "And Sarai said to Abram, 'Behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant, it may be that I shall obtain children by her.' And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai." Sarai knew that God controlled barrenness. She says, "The Lord has prevented me." And in the previous chapter, Abram also states this. He says to God, "You have given me no children." God is always the one in control, even over painful and incomprehensible circumstances in our lives. And then it says, "Obtain children by her," or the NIV says, "I can build a family through her." So Sarai is taking matters into her own hands. The language here also seems to be similar to what we read in Genesis 11 when they built the Tower of Babel for their own security and to make a name for themselves. God wants to be the builder and had promised to build Abram this family, and instead Sarah wants to take matters into her own hands and build it herself, as we often do also. On that note, an interesting literary technique that I have learned to see throughout the Bible is that the authors repeat key words and themes, especially ones from Genesis and Exodus, to show patterns and parallels in the Bible. And so we see this verse that Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. This is the same wording as in Genesis 3 in the Garden of Eden when Adam sinned and listened to the voice of his wife Eve. And of course the issue is not specifically that they listened to their wives, because in Genesis 21 God does say, "Listen to your wife Sarah," but that they listened to them instead of listening to God. God had spoken to Abram directly, just as he had to Adam, and made a covenant with him. But Abram didn't respond to Sarai here by reminding her of what God had said. He simply listened to her, as Adam did with Eve in the garden. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. So Sarai runs out of patience and relies on herself to address this situation. Again, in that repeated pattern, we see familiar words of Eden and the forbidden fruit. The woman took Hagar and gave her to her husband, as Eve did with the fruit. And so we see that the pattern repeats, and that Abram and Sarai are no different than rebellious Adam and Eve. In case we think that we would have done differently than Adam and Eve and obeyed God, the Old Testament repeatedly shows us time and time again that along with every other human, we too would fall short and fail as they all did. And then he went into Hagar and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." So again, as in Eden, we see blame. Adam had said, "I sinned because of the woman you put here." Eve said, "It is because the serpent deceived me." And so we see here that involving Hagar was all Sarai's idea, and yet she is blaming Abram. But Abram said to Sarai, "Behold, your servant is in your power. Do to her as you please." Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her. Do to her as you please, or the NIV says, whatever you think is best. In other words, do what is wise in your own eyes. So Sarai, in effect, throws Hagar away. She deals harshly with her to the point Hagar takes off carrying her unborn child to escape this harsh treatment. The angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. So Shur indicates that Hagar was on her way back to Egypt. And the spring of water is also called a well in verse 14. So we see here that she is at a well in the wilderness. And the angel of the Lord, in verse 13, we later see it is the Lord himself. It says it was the Lord who spoke to her. So we'll see that in a moment. But the Lord seeks her out. She wasn't looking for God. He finds her, he comforts her, and directs her next steps. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? She said, I am fleeing from my mistress Sarai. So God knew the answer to this question, where have you come from and where are you going? But the question echoed his question to Adam in Genesis 3 when he said, where are you? He is inviting Hagar into a conversation with him. The angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her. This can be a difficult verse to hear, but in this case, this is God's direction to Hagar. We see here that being loved by God doesn't prevent us from enduring hardships. In God seeking Hagar out, he doesn't do so to eliminate all her earthly problems, but in fact, he directs her back to an uncomfortable, unwelcoming environment. Sarai and Hagar never get along, even after Sarai gives birth to Isaac, and Hagar and Ishmael are kicked out in chapter 21 of Genesis. But in God's inscrutable wisdom, this is his directive to Hagar in her particular circumstance, return and submit. The angel of the Lord also said to her, I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude. Hagar is the only woman in the Bible to receive this comfort and a promise. God would protect and bless her son and multiply her offspring. And the angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him. And he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen. So Ishmael means God hears. Every time Hagar called his name, she could be reminded that the Lord had listened to her affliction. God hears. Ishmael's descendants are generally referring to Arab descendants, although it is more complicated. But we can observe some of this described conflict in the world. However, we have to remember God's sovereign ordering of history. While there is still human responsibility, God was not caught off guard by Ishmael's birth. Back to Genesis 12, when God initially calls Abram, the promises that God makes include that all the people on earth will be blessed through Abram. So although Ishmael is not the promised child, part of God's intention in having a promised righteous line has always been to bless others. So she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, you are a God who sees me. For she said, truly here I have seen him who looks after me. Some other translations say, you are a God of seeing. You are Elroy, which means God sees me. I have now seen the one who sees me. And then therefore the well was called Beer Lahay Roy. So that means the well of the living one who sees me. One of the first names of God recorded in the Bible is declared by Hagar, the pagan slave girl, Elroy, the God who sees me. Hagar had perhaps never truly been seen by another person. Did Abram or Sarai truly see Hagar? They were aware of her and how she could serve them and their purposes, but they did not see her in the sense that they valued her as someone who bears the image of her creator. But God saw her. Hagar's specific name of God, Elroy, is not repeated per se in the Bible, yet the idea that God always sees us is throughout the Old and New Testaments. Psalm 139, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. Psalm 33, Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, on those who hope in his steadfast love. Psalm 34, The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous and his ears toward their cry. Psalm 94, He who planted the ear, does he not hear? He who formed the eye, does he not see? And God has a different vision than we do. 1 Samuel 16, For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. And 2 Chronicles 16, For the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. And in Exodus 2 and 3, we read several times that God heard the groaning and saw the suffering of the Israelites in Egypt, a God who hears and sees, as we saw in this passage. So here we see in Genesis 16 that the Lord sought out a woman who was a rejected outcast while she was at a well in the wilderness, a well that she then names the Well of the Living One Who Sees Me, because she had seen the God who sees her. This isn't just a story from the early pages of the Bible. In John chapter 4, we see Jesus, the Lord, seeking out a Samaritan woman at a well who was an outcast and broken, and he offers her living water. And her response was, Come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Essentially, come and see the God who sees me. We too are all broken outcasts, or worse. Romans 5 says that while we were God's enemies, Romans 5 says that we were God's enemies, but that God demonstrates his own love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us, and we are reconciled to God through the death of his Son. Thankfully, despite our inability to follow God's commands, as we saw with Abram and Sarai and Adam and Eve, God has provided a way for us to have a relationship with him. Because of Jesus' death on the cross, we can be united to his sinless perfection through having faith in him. And God provided this way for us while we were his enemies, sinners, having nothing to offer him. As with Hagar in our lowly state, God finds us and seeks us out. He sees us before we see him, and he offers us himself. He may direct us to places that are difficult, but he promises that he will never leave or forsake us, and that he hears us, and that he sees us. An excerpt from Desiring God says, In a world of distracted glances and ceaseless passive scrolling, God sees you. He sees you not with a casual glance, but with an intentional, focused gaze. Not simply with the incriminating eye of a judge, but with the compassionate heart of a savior. You are the reflection of his glory and the object of his delight. He sees you. And we just have a song to end, and kind of as Joyce alluded to, this was not planned that Laura Nanny would speak on vision and that my theme would be the God of seeing. So God coordinated that detail as well. So yeah, we just have a song to close.